Good morning, good morning, good morning. Happy Monday and happy Indigenous Day. This is Hometown Alaska, and I am your host, Justin Williams. I hope everyone is doing fantastic today. We were just talking about coffee and how we all need to wake up a little bit. So I hope as you're listening to this show that you have a warm cup of whatever that you drink and are ready to go, because we're definitely going to be going in this morning. Today, we will be talking about celebrating and observing Indigenous Peoples Day. And with me here, I have Miss Lisa Wade from Chicoloon, the executive director for the Chicoloon Village Traditional Council. Lisa, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic today. I'm celebrating Indigenous Peoples Day today and every day.
That's what I like to hear. I just said that this is something that I hope that we continue to talk about throughout the year. It's not just one of those things that, you know, 364 days of the year we don't discuss, that this is, that we understand how important this is, and you know, are able to talk about it and to enjoy and celebrate it. Yeah, it's something very, very beautiful and something very, very positive. So I'm so happy to have you here, Lisa. Thank you for spending your time with us, and I'm excited to get into this. Super excited.
I want to give a shout out before we get started.
Heck
to the Yanida'a High School students who are listening in today.
Woohoo!
And for those of you that don't know, Yanida'a School is the first tribal school in the state of Alaska that's been owned and operated by a tribal government since way back in like 1992.
Wow. That is beautiful, and that's very, very exciting to have all you guys listening. What's up, y'all? I'm imagining you guys are in the studio with me. Me and Tobin are quite lonely in here, so we have a bunch of imaginary friends right across from the desk. It's going to be okay.
COVID.
Yes.
We're all isolated,
but we're all together, aren't we? Because of that.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Lisa, thank you so much for being here. And we also have Miss Mita Dewitt. She is our Lingit traditional healer, ethno-herbalist, multidisciplinary artist, community leader, educator, advocate of Indigenous health practices, as well as environmental stewardship. Mita, that was a mouthful. You do way too much. And I'm so happy that you're here to join me and Lisa. How are you doing this morning?
Ah, yake tutat. Good morning, good morning. And I am doing well. So on that introduction, the L in the Lingit language is lateral.
Mm.
And just as an education point, the T or the K that was put in front of Tlingit was because the Western tongue couldn't wrap itself around the Tlingit L. So we're going to practice. And you put your tongue up behind your teeth, mm-hmm. and you blow the air out the sides. Tlingit.
Tlingit.
Tlingit. Tlingit. Yep.
Okay. I'm going to work on that.
Okay. Good job.
Thank you. I get a B minus maybe for a...
No, A plus plus.
A plus plus.
Practicing publicly in front of everybody.
Oh, you flatter me. Well, thank you guys so much for joining me. As soon as my producer asked me, like, what did I want to talk about today? Or what did I want to talk about on my next show? I asked him if I could have the 11th, so that we could talk about this. And so this is something that I think about a lot. I'm a sociology major from UAA. So the professors there when I was there did a fantastic job of helping us unlearn a lot of things about society from a tiny perspective, from the individual human perspective, right? My life perspective, my life experience, and the macro level experience, right? Other people's experiences, other people's cultures, being culturally sensitive, inclusive, empathetic. And so I understand what it means to be, a Black man in America. I understand what it means to be, within a marginalized community. But being Indigenous is another... It's something else, right? I feel, and we'll get to this a little bit later, but I feel that you know, the public school system did a not so great job of teaching us the importance of our Indigenous brothers and sisters. And so, Lisa, I want to address this question to you first. What does being Indigenous mean to you?
Wow, that's a big question.
Yeah.
Well, I think for me, it means connection, relationship, reciprocity to not only people, but place, all the things around me. It means connection to all things, foods, people, place. I guess those are the best words. And stewardship and responsibility.
Mm.
We all have responsibility to each other, to our students. Just really, it all for me goes back to the original way of being with each other, which is to be responsible to one another.
Mm-hmm.
And to really hold dear all those things that weren't lost, you know, completely due to colonization, really.
Yeah.
So uplifting and celebrating today those things that we still hold on to. And in our case, there's a lot of amazing people that I work with in our school that are doing a lot of language preservation work for the Atna-Kanagat language, which is, you know, one of the imperiled languages. And so holding dear to those things, the cultural aspects of daily living, all the things.
Okay, all the things. You said a very important word that positively triggered me. You said reciprocity. That for me aligns with empathy. It aligns with sensitivity and aligns with respect. How do I put this nicely? I feel like there's not a lot of reciprocity, socially speaking, especially when it comes to housing our neighbor if they need housing, feeding our neighbor if they need shelter. When we talk about being Indigenous and what it talks of, when people like me are learning what it means for others to be Indigenous and for people like me to observe and respect and to acknowledge and celebrate history, one of the first things that I experience, and this happens every time, is pushback. I don't understand why. Well, I'm not that naive, but I don't understand why there's so much pushback for a people with a history so prominent and so important and significant and so deep that it affects everyone around us. So I picked this day because I want people to know being Indigenous is amazing. It is awesome and it is worth reverence because there is literal history in the DNA of this entire state, of this entire country. And I think it's such a radically beautiful thing. So when you say reciprocity, oh, that word just really makes me smile because that can mean so many different things from people of the same state, the same city, the same town, the same tribe, right? And it's so important to remember who you are and how to celebrate that with other people, those that are like you and those that are not like you. Mita.
Absolutely. And
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, let's break that down to a little bit into what today really was. You know, it used to be celebrated as a conqueror's day with no reciprocity, right?
Right.
It was all about come and take away. There wasn't reciprocity in that. And, you know, now we're celebrating something that celebrates, you know, I think it's a pretty universal concept, this notion of shared communal ways of being and reciprocity. And so today, you know, I'm glad we're celebrating something different, although I do wish it was every single day. And I do wish, you know, you hearken to the school, bringing it into the school district. And I can tell you, I've had some challenges out here where we live in the map, too, with what's been taught around history in the schools and the way Indigenous peoples are recognized. Here at Yanidaa, we teach a really well-rounded version of that, including things like utilizing the history of the United States and Indigenous peoples' history, in books that are tell a more comprehensive story about this. So I think when I say reciprocity, what I really mean is really looking at those relationships to history, too.
I think that's extremely important thing to talk about as well, you know. So, thank you so much for enlightening us to that. Mita, what are your thoughts? What does it mean for you to be Indigenous?
Oh, goodness. Well, that's a whole dissertation in itself.
Dang it.
So, you know, Tlingit translates to being the people of the land, the Nupak translates to being the real people of the land, Yupik translates to being the people of the land, Lunangach and Alutik and Dene, you know, Simshan and Haida and Nyak, that translation is the people of the land.
Mm.
And that shift from being conquerors of a space to being relatives or belonging to a space is part of that Indigenous identity. And that erasure is important because when people love something, they protect it.
Right.
You know, we have the people of Bristol Bay who've been protecting their salmon against pebble mine for over 15 years. You know, we have the Gwich'in and Anupak people up north protecting their space, the caribou, against drilling for over 40 years. And it's as an Indigenous person, there's a longevity of relationship that spans thousands of years. And some people like to say 10, but, you know, according to our stories and geological time, it's well over 20,000 years. And in other places, even longer. If you go into the interior, some of the old elders, you know, the Dene elders will share with you stories of saber-toothed tigers. So when you get into this process, it's to be Indigenous to a space is that longevity of relationship and to being humble and to being a relative of that space.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so to personalize this story, when I was in my early 20s, you know, trying to, not late teens, early 20s, trying to figure out my identity and who I was, I talked to my grandma. She lived with me for several years, and I downloaded all those, you know, old family stories, and I said, Grandma, I don't think, you know, like, am I Native enough? Yeah, because I mixed blood, and I'm like, I don't have a lot of Native art, and I don't have a lot of regalia, and she's kind of laughed at me, you know, and of course, I was very young, and she, it wasn't a bad laugh, she was kind of giggled, and she says, oh, honey,
yeah.
Your grandparents spent their whole lives fighting for the right to be Native. Now it's your job to go out and enjoy being Native. So that's the framework to all the work that I do, is it's how do we be in joy of being Indigenous and who we are, and then also creating access to what is Indigenous, because it is beyond, like, I love our art and I love our clothing, but there's that internal culture,
right,
and the acting culture. And so for me, I express that on being on the land and harvesting food and plants and making medicine and sharing medicine and story and teaching.
Mm-hmm.
So to be Indigenous is more than just being, you know, genetically from a place.
Right.
It's that, and you know, you hearkened on reciprocity, which Lisa talked about. It's not the give and take relationship, it's the give and receive. And that's that kind of shift that we all have to make in our thinking is, you know, it's not give and take. It's you give, and then you give it with pure generosity, and then you, in reciprocity, you receive back, honoring that gift of what you gave.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it doesn't come directly, and sometimes it may not come at all, but that's that letting go part that's really important to that process.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, originally the Taino people, you know, Columbus didn't even make it to the formal Americas. It was down in the Caribbean when the people came from Europe. you know, who are refugees pretty much, they were given freely by the indigenous people food and medicine and spaces to be. But mm-hmm. then, you know, it was used against them. The generosity was used against them. But we're still here and we're still teaching and still sharing. And that's, you know, now that we're facing climate change, mm-hmm. something that Wilson Justin says started at contact, because that's when the relationship went out of balance with nature. Now that it's fully recognized that that taking mindset has caused this, you know, we have to come back to the indigenous thought and indigenous people and our traditional ecological knowledge and our traditional ways of being, so that we can bring back the system back into balance and be real human beings again.
Mm-hmm. I think that's extremely exciting to hear you talk about that. And I also think, too, that, yeah, when we talk about the history of a people, you know, an important thing to talk about, an important thing to emphasize is how to preserve it. Because if it's not preserved, if it's not cherished, watered like a plant, taken care of and receiving the right amount of exposure to sunlight, right? What becomes of it? It doesn't grow, it doesn't spread. And before you know it, people forget about it. And I think it's one of the scariest things for someone to forget who they are. Not knowing who you are is one thing, because you can get there, right? But once you get there and then after that you forget, I think that's horrible. And I think that's tragic, and I wouldn't wish that on anybody. So, you know, education and, you know, and empathy, that reciprocity we keep harkening back to, is an extremely important thing when we're talking about indigenous people of this state, of this country. And I do want, for our listeners, I do want to let you know that this is a live show and you can chime in at any time you would like to. If you have a story about being indigenous, if you have a thought on the matter, our local number is 550-8433 and statewide 1-888-353-5752. And again, we were talking about Indigenous Peoples Day, and I'm just excited to kind of be amongst both of you. And I'm already just learning so much from you both. So thank you so much for spending your time here with me. And yeah, Columbus Day is a very controversial thing. I did not enjoy going back and doing the research, as important as it was. And I did learn a lot, right? A lot of very important things that, for whatever reason, was kind of excluded in my curriculum of my youth in public school. And I learned a lot of things. There's a lot of important dates in my head now, you know, about, you know, what states in America, Alaska included, right, decided to kind of get rid of, you know, Columbus Day and replace that with Indigenous Peoples Day. The events that took place to kind of, you know, get that in the motion, the people that fought for that, so that we could be talking about it today. You know, when it became a national holiday, a federal holiday, President Biden's recent proclamation of it, right? So my question, I want to kind of shift just a tiny little bit. What do you think, Lisa, I'll address this to you. What do you think it means to be an indigenous in America, right? Like, we talk about Alaska as it pertains to Alaska because this is what we are and who we are, but this state is so pivotal to the nation, and Indigenous Peoples Day is something that has to be celebrated and observed globally, I think. So what do you think it means to be indigenous, not just in Alaska, but what do you think it means on a national macro level scale to be indigenous in America?
Well, you know, I don't really like to think about it in those terms, because I feel like we're all relations, right? I really feel like the struggle that other people experience is our struggle. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that relationship, that connection. So I think it's a shared kind of feeling. It's not, you know, what does it mean to be in America? I think it's our personal experience of what it means. You know, I can tell you a little bit about my experience with Indigenous Peoples Day and what it kind of means to me.
Absolutely.
You know, I was sitting in the auditorium at the Dena'ina Center when Governor Walker read out the proclamation for Indigenous Peoples Day. And I can tell you, listening to that and looking around the room at the grandmas and the grandpas in the room, there were tears. I cried. You know, and I was like, what does this mean? Why am I so emotionally charged about this? And I think, you know, it was coming off of a time where we'd been fighting against extractive industry and just so many things that I saw hurting our peoples. And then I realized it meant, you know, we were being visible. We were no longer invisible in that public perspective, and that people were recognizing that there had been this invisibility piece and that there was celebrations around this other person. And there was celebrations in that room. And then very quickly after that, my thoughts shifted to why one day? You know, why is this just one day we're celebrating our people and the survival, really, of our people?
Right.
And then, you know, quickly after that, I had one of our borough representatives out here in the Mat-Su Borough Assembly come to me and say, hey, I want to do an Indigenous Peoples Resolution. And will you help me craft that? And so we worked on that with Jim Sykes, and he brought that before the assembly, and I brought one of our Yanida'a young women with me to that celebration and some of our other tribal citizens. And there were, I think, 3 people that voted against it. And when you go into that arena and you have people that don't want to recognize you, you know, it's painful. It's a painful process. And then when it came around for the vote for the state recognition, our own representative out here voted against it.
Right.
And so, you know, I've had, and then showed up for a celebration with our Yanida'a students shortly thereafter. So there are so many conflicting feelings wrapped around this kind of idea of creating a framework to celebrate our people. So the struggles that I talk about really, they go back to Columbus. They go back to colonization. They go back to that whole idea of taking from the land and the people. And, you know, to say it was in the past is not fair, because it still happens up here in Alaska today. You know, I'm still surrounded out here in the Mat-Su with the words Colony High School, Colony Way, Colony Kitchen, the Colony Days Parade. You know, we celebrate colonization like it's this big, exciting thing, right? And then there were people that brought good innovations and good strides into our community, friends and relatives of my grandmother's. But, you know, there were also Indigenous people here for thousands of years, my relations here for thousands and thousands of years. And there's not a celebration, you know. So it's just like in the schools. Things get celebrated because the dominant narrative gets to create what they want to teach. And so that's why it's so important to have schools like ours that can actually look at things from this multi-viewpoint perspective. But it's a really kind of a loaded day for me for many reasons. But I think, you know, when you're talking nationally, I think we all share similar stories. We all share stories of colonization, of assimilation, of impacts, of boarding schools, all of us.
Absolutely. And thank you for sharing those thoughts with me. And that's a good perspective for me, you know. And before we go on a short break, Amita, I want to address that same question to you. Do you agree? What's your experience about that, from that perspective, from that scale?
Yeah, well, I choose to reject that perspective. And what you have to do is flip it. Basically, what does it mean to be American on Indigenous land? Because what Lisa's speaking to is, you know, we have this dominant culture who is intentionally creating an erasure of people and history so that they can illegally take lands and continue to go through the process of cultural genocide of the people. So Columbus didn't make it to the Americas. He didn't discover anything. Mm-hmm. We have nationhood. It's, you know, tribal government-to-government relationship. And it's not, you know, there's people who don't want to acknowledge it, but it's not their option to acknowledge it or not. It's the truth. It's been proven in court. Mm-hmm. It's continued to be upheld. And so when we're taking, you know, these days that are, they're basically, they're, it's a false narrative, right?
Right.
So reclaiming the truth, reclaiming balance, and reclaiming relationship. And there's people who fight against that because they don't want to lose, you know, the privilege or the identity that they have, because the other one, you know, when you start getting into the truth of what Columbus did and what some of these other people did, it's very shameful. And it's hard for people to accept those truths and to deal with it. They don't know how. And then there's that fear of a punitive response.
Mm-hmm.
But as Indigenous people, we're not wanting a punitive response. We're wanting to balance the relationship, enter into that government-to-government format, and work together as communities. Because mm-hmm. that's who we are as a people.
Right. And I think that's extremely powerful, that call for solidarity and that importance of it, you know. The getting into the legacy and history of, you know, of Columbus Day does incite a whole lot of emotions. And, you know, like I said, I really got kind of emotional kind of going over the research and rediscovering a lot of, you know, what really happened, a lot of the things that I was not taught, that I was kind of, you know, groomed to, you know, celebrate, you know. And thankfully, we did have access to resources to later in life discover the truth and realize there is a lot that we need to unlearn and a lot that needs to be undone. Because just like both of you said, what's happening in the past is still happening today. It's not just in the past. It's not just something to forget. It's something that needs to be acknowledged, and there's still certain institutions and authorities that need to be held accountable, right? So that we can progress, I believe. So we are going to take a very short break. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. Today we're talking about Indigenous Peoples Day with Mita DeWitt and Lisa Wade. Feel free to give us a call if you're in Anchorage at 550-8433, or if you're local statewide, 1-888-353-5752. You can also shoot us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. For more information about this episode, visit us online at alaskapublic.org.
The conversations you hear on Hometown Alaska are focused on the needs and voices of Alaskans, and the generosity of Alaskans brings them to you. Join your neighbors and become a member of your public radio station today.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I am your host, Justin Williams. Today, we are talking about Indigenous Peoples Day with Lisa Wade and Mita DeWitt. If you want to join in to the live conversation, feel free to give us a call. If you're in Anchorage, that number will be 550-8433, statewide 1-888-353-5752. 353-5752. And you can always shoot us an email too at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Thank you, Lisa and Mita, for joining me for this conversation. This has been extremely insightful and educational for me already. I'm thoroughly enjoying you guys sharing your life experiences and your perspectives and the truth of today and of yesterday and what it means for tomorrow. So thank you guys so much for spending your time, which is your most precious commodity, here with me at Hometown Alaska. And you know, my next question for both of you guys, we've already talked about and have both mentioned this idea of pushback, right? Like there's incentive for certain people, certain corporations, certain, you know, communities to not celebrate the native peoples of this state, to kind of endorse colonization and to endorse a particular narrative of what has happened and to not dig any deeper into the actual truth, or to look on the other side and say, maybe this was good for us, but it wasn't bad for A, B, and C, right? Lisa, what do you think the implications of that sort of pushback are for Alaskans? Because like you said earlier, this isn't something that's just in the past. This is something that is, that's still happening. So what are the implications of that pushback?
You know, I think there's been a strategy that's been employed for probably many, many hundreds, at least of thousands, maybe thousands of years over there. But essentially, it is pitting one people against each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from what I've researched and read, that was a strategy that Columbus used with Arawak people and other peoples. And, you know, it's still kind of holding true today, which is to say that, you know, the government, and it really goes down to resource extraction and taking from the land. You know, you give haves and then you give have-nots, and people suffer. And it's, you know, there's so many layers to this. It's like, it's not a one-show kind of thing, because we're talking about stripping people of identity, stripping people of their culture, of the land, of the resources that they used to survive on in their land.
Yeah.
And so it's not a simple thing to discuss. But if we talk about it today, you're talking about things like, we got to really look at ANCSCA. What did that do to us? You know, it divided us up as people. It divided us up into corporations. It divided us up into, you know, some people that belong to the corporation, some people that don't, some people that have land, some people that don't. And ultimately, it carved Alaska up into these spaces, this disconnected way of being. And, you know, you have people up north that have experienced so much trauma as a result of that removal of land. And, you know, we meet as women and talk these things through about what our communities look like and what's happened within our communities, what's happened to the disconnect within our families. And time and time again, it all goes back to this idea of what's been taken away, what's been stripped from people. In my community, it's coal mining. You know, the early 1900s, people came in to get coal. They brought a railroad. They brought a road. They brought all this infrastructure into this small community. And then with it came all the other things, you know, taking kids away to boarding school, alcohol, influenza, all the diseases. And so, you know, these are hard things to talk about. And they're hard things to come to terms with, but then they're hard things to talk about to people that still want to keep taking resources today. Mm-hmm. You know, we're still dealing with all of those ideas of take, take, take. And in a state that actually has a mandate to benefit from the resources of the land built into the Constitution, it's an uphill battle every time.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way that I think they can justify it is that to create that invisibility. So, and I say they. What I mean by they is I mean really corporate interests mm-hmm. that come in and benefit from the taking of land. This is probably super controversial, but it's something that if you sit down and have conversations with a lot of people that are of the land, the story repeats itself over and over again.
Mm. Wow. I think that has got to be just a goal in general, right? History has repeated itself innumerable times, and it has almost never been a good thing. And you said a very important word. You said strategy. You said there's been a strategy, which means that this sort of pushback with these sort of issues with something like this is intentional. That they're
I jump in?
You may, yes.
Yeah, thank you. So just to speak to what Lisa was talking about and the intentionality of this and mm-hmm. that you just raised. Back in 1400, Pope Nicholas V wrote a papist bull for the king.
Mm-hmm.
And in those documents, it said, if people are not Christian, then they are not human.
Mm-hmm.
And their lands can be taken from them, and they can be enslaved to work those lands or murdered without any repercussions. And in those documents by the Pope, it literally gives a carte blanche forgiveness for any of the activities that they do in pursuit of gaining land, resources, and slave labor for the crown and for the church.
Mm.
So it's not like we're just passively saying, oh, we think there's a trend. There's literally in documents that you can go back and research, and that's what Columbus sailed under was those documents.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what colonization did when it came to the Americas. Now, we have to acknowledge that this didn't just happen here. It happened also in the Northern Europe tribes.
Mm-hmm.
It happened, with bringing African Americans to the United States mm-hmm. under that same frame of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And that, originated, it even predated, kind of Central Europe. And it's a process of breaking people in their true nature, right? If you go back and you kind of go into the Romans and look at that soldier, they went out and conquested because they had these cities that were fortified. And in those cities were their families, their women, their children, their mothers, their fathers, their aunties. And it's not within human nature to rape and pillage and murder, right? And that all that bloodlust isn't natural to us. It's a created thing because there are people who benefit from those behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, what they did is they used their heart against them to go out and conquest. And then once they go through the process of conquest, then they lose their true nature because they have to compartmentalize in their mind and their psyche and their spirit and break it apart to be able to do those things. And once it occurs, then it only builds on itself. Mm-hmm. And that's the origination of this colonization. And it goes into the dehumanizing people, reducing animals and plants and nature to subservient.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a sickness in this human framework that we have to speak about and we have to resolve
mm-hmm.
because it doesn't serve us in our longevity as a species, right? Mm-hmm. We have to return into that human space and looking at this as systemic trauma that was intentional
mm-hmm.
that we now as a group have to work to heal.
Right.
And, if you want to look at, see a visual of this, all you have to do is type in a map of manifest destiny.
Mm.
You could see where there were, where our peoples all across this land were, in spread out and plentiful, right? Languages abound, cultures abound. And then you look over time and you can actually see how they've been pushed into pockets on certain parts of land.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really striking to me about that is you can see that it starts in the east and where we are today is the sparseness and small pockets of indigenous peoples, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even though they're probably everywhere, but they've pushed them into these small pockets. And then you see the impact coming up to Alaska, and you can see where it's actually moving this direction.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of that same philosophy has finally made its way over here. So what I always say is what happened over hundreds of years down there is happening in rapid time up here.
Mm. Wow.
In the last 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
So when people say, this is one of my least favorite things to hear, is people say, why don't you get over it? You know, it's time to move on. My people didn't enslave, or whatever the, you know, favorite words are. Mm-hmm. But they say that, but then you say, well, you know, people in my generation went to boarding school. It wasn't hundreds of years ago.
Right.
You know, people in my generation have experienced these illnesses. So it's very different to think about when you think about systemically what happened to people, what happened over time as a result of those capable and manifest destiny.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, thinking about that is, it's insane, isn't it? To think that that happened and that we need to talk about that today. Because what happened yesterday affects today, and what we do today affects tomorrow.
You know, a lot of the women I know, this is myself included, you know, I feel like one of my primary responsibilities is just to do everything I can to keep all of those trauma things that happened as a result of colonization from our people, and especially from my daughter. And I know Mita and I've had these conversations. It's like, I always liken it to this wave that's coming at you, you know, a 50-foot wave coming at you all the time from a lot of different angles that you're trying to hold back from people.
Yeah.
And it just keeps coming.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think shifting gears, because I don't want to be all doom and gloom, right? There's a lot of things that we're doing as Indigenous peoples to figure out our strategies to combat this,
right,
and to uplift and celebrate our people. And maybe we should talk about some of those.
I would like to. In fact, let's hop into that in just a second. We do have a caller on the line, and maybe this will be a very good segue. Tetla, did I say your name correctly?
Yeah, that's correct. Usually people have to say it 2 or 3 times. Anyway, I just had a comment about you know, we're Alaska Natives. We have been assimilated to Western society and culture. And in doing so, we took on the cash economy. We went from eating and drinking and working in ways that did not generate a dollar to relying completely on, you know, grocery stores and paved roads and the cash economy. So my point is, like, we've gone pretty quickly, you know, into the fields of Western society and culture. And I think it's time for us to have that self-determination and take on the responsibility of healing our own people through, you know, the judicial system as well. So having our own native police in our own regions that you know, that are helping our people in a culturally sensitive way that looks at the cultural knowledge, and also, you know, just divorcing ourselves from the current judicial system. Because if you look at the prisons in Alaska, there's a more than 50% probably Alaska Native men who didn't have to be there.
Right.
You know, we have a whole economy around, you know, putting the Native men on a conveyor belt into prison and being processed in with little review. Where one Native man could go to prison so quickly and easily, but if one Native man wants to go to a treatment center to talk to a counselor to get a therapist, it takes a lot of work and a lot of determination and a lot of buy-in from a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And it is almost impossible for anyone to go to treatment. You got to get on a list. And by the time you look and talk to a few people about getting on a list, you just give up.
Mm.
So you might as well just go to jail if you got alcohol, you know. So that's just kind of like where I'm at. I think we know our problems. We know the solution. So I think it's time for us to take the power back and exercise our self-determination and to start taking control back from the state. In that sense, to better help our people. So that's all I had to say. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, no, thank you. Thank you so much for calling and for that powerful insight. And we are going to take a very short break. We're going to be right back. And yeah, Lisa, Mita, we are going to start talking about less doom and gloom. And we're going to talk about some positive stuff as we close the episode out. This is Justin Williams, everybody. You're listening to Hometown Alaska with Lisa Wade and Mita DeWitt. We are discussing Indigenous Peoples Day. I hope you're all celebrating this day today. Feel free to give us a call, 550-8433 if you're local, and if you're statewide, that's 1-888-353-5752. And we can also be reached at hometown@alaskapublic.org. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. You can find Hometown Alaska on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we are in the final stretch of today's episode here at Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Justin Williams. I am here with Lisa Wade and Mita DeWitt talking about Indigenous Peoples Day, observing it, celebrating it, understanding what it means to be Indigenous here. Feel free to give us a call at 550-8433 if you're local, or statewide, 1-888-353-5752. We can also be reached at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Today, guys, it's a good day. I think it's a good day. We've talked about a lot of things that need to be talked about. And this is one of those things that, you know, I don't think anyone really, quote unquote, wants to. Lisa, earlier you had said that, you know, by not talking about it, we're kind of establishing a rhetoric of what's happened in the past needs to stay in the past. It's been said, you know, why don't you just forget about it? Why don't you just get over it, right? This is DNA. This is history. This is huge. This is not something that you just stop thinking about, stop talking about, stop acting upon, right? When I think more recent movements for marginalized communities, I think of Stop Asian Hate, I think of Black Lives Matter, people literally saying in the streets, stop murdering us, and there was still pushback. I think that's insanity. When we start talking about addressing things that have happened in the past that do affect us deeply today on an institutional level, we had a caller that just talked about the judicial system. We're talking about prison. We're talking about recidivism. We're talking about all this stuff. But even on an emotional scale, right, what's actually being done about that? You know what I mean? And that whole idea of just leave it in the past, it's fine, it happened, get over it. No.
that caller was powerful. I really appreciated what he had to say.
Yeah.
And I couldn't agree more. You know, I don't think we could have this conversation without calling into the conversation, the Murdered Missing Indigenous Women movement that's happening right now.
Absolutely.
And if anything doesn't speak to what we've been talking about, it really is that. And there's so many other disparities. You know, we talk about the prison system, like Doug brought up there. You know, I just had the conversation the other day with COVID happening. Representation has been challenged for Indigenous and other people of color because they're getting less time with judges, less time
right.
with the prosecutors or the defendants. And so, you know, a lot of people are getting sentenced quicker. There's some real, real challenging things happening for our people right now. And, you know, I think that's one of the things I really appreciate about being from Chicoloon is we're looking at
these ways of disrupting those systems and kind of taking that back. So, you know, we have our own tribal court system, which has been developed to basically take care of our people. And our mission is really to help our citizens to thrive. And so we're doing that through the court system. We've developed relationships with the local court system so that we can have a say in sentencing, so that we can help with trying to get people into treatment as opposed to just cycling them through. You know, we know in the OCS system, there's a high percentage of our kids in there, and that's, you know, really unacceptable. We tend to get out of that system. And then also, you know, throughout Indian Child Welfare programs. But then also we recognize that those are the kids that are going to go through that pipeline system. So it's a real systemic challenge that we're facing. And really the solution to this is that our tribal governments get the support they need to be able to work locally on these solutions. And, you know, I'm really excited about some of the things that we've been doing over the past several years. And they benefit not just our people, but our entire community. You know, we built a community health center out here in Sutton that serves everyone. It doesn't just serve our people.
Right.
You know, what's good for us is good for everyone. And I think that's our mindset, that connection that we talk about. We're not just going to exclude people. We're going to look out for everyone in our community. We have transit systems that are for everyone. Our school is open to everyone. So I think there's, you know, where others might want to exclude or, you've used the word marginalized several times, which is not my favorite word, right?
Right.
But, you know, we are very, I think, inclusive by nature. You know, my grandma would always feed people the best food when they stop by to visit. That's how our values, we're centered in our values.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think we're doing a lot to try and combat colonialism. We're developing partnerships with others to educate. We do things called Matsu Equity Dialogues with some partners that actually go out and talk about systemic racism and what it looks like in our community. We help partner with Rock Matsu to develop also another training around racism and systemic racism so that we can educate teachers and medical care providers and justice folks, you know, because the story has been so dominant in so many different places, and now the real stories of the impact of colonialism are coming out in Alaska. We want to help with that.
Yeah. And you are. Both of you are. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I would be remiss if I didn't say that the number one reason that our school was created was that my grandmother kept getting invited up to the local correctional center to work with the Alaska Native men. They would to teach them crafts and things. And they'd come out, and they'd stay at her house. And then pretty soon thereafter, the trauma would surface, and they'd end up right back up there in that system because there wasn't enough care for them. And so she determined, you know, we need to really teach our kids who they are, where they're from, and the beautiful strengths that come from being Indigenous. And that's what our school is really all about. That's today what we're celebrating, is the beauty of our people, the resilience of our ancestors, and the strength of our people.
Without a doubt. And something that was said that really stuck out to me just now was, what's good for us is good for everybody.
Well, when you look at our communities, you know, Alaska only has one state that's technically considered a reservation, but it's actually reserved for the Tsimshian people in Metlakatla.
Yeah.
But the rest of our state, our communities are mixed communities.
Right.
And you can see within the process of like our tribal health compacting, where a lot of times maybe the only clinic in town is run by the Native healthcare system. And those clinics see everybody in the community, because that is a core function of who we are and our culture, right? Is when our leaders are charged with the responsibility of the base wellness of everybody in the community, whether they're, you know, Hinget or if they're adopted into that space. So, you know, the tribes, when we empower them with their sovereign rights and compact agreements and funding to provide health and education and wellness, they're going to provide it to everybody in those spaces. And that's really the strength of our rural communities, is going to be relying on the tribes to be able to do that and supporting them to be able to do that, providing health care and education and jobs and housing and food. When we start meeting those base needs of people, then they can start undoing and addressing that internalized trauma.
Yeah.
Right? Because we have historical trauma, we have intergenerational trauma, and we have persisting trauma.
Yeah.
And not just Alaska Native people, but all people have some form.
Mm-hmm.
Ours is harder because it was done purposefully, and we can trace it, and we know it's there. And so there's that injustice that has to be addressed. And when it's fully acknowledged and addressed, then we can work on it together as a team, as family, as relatives, and we can move forward in a good way.
Yeah, that is so beautiful. And that is extremely important for everyone listening to understand. And this is one of those things that, you know, now that we're really getting into the swing of it, I just want to keep going for another 3 hours. You know, the other shows, you know, or yeah, they can wait, you know. But we got to wrap up this episode of Hometown Alaska in just a few minutes as it's closing time. But Lisa Mita, I wanted to thank you so much, so, so much for your time here. And I wanted to ask you guys both one last question. As it is Indigenous Peoples Day, what resources come to mind off the top of your heads to help us, all of us, not just people who are not Indigenous, but all of us, right, learn about how to celebrate, how to observe? Books, organizations, you guys have both extremely important jobs, but what can we do to learn about today, to share about today?
Well, I could think of one right off the top of my head. Native Movement is having an online Zoom session almost immediately after this.
Mm-hmm.
It's out on Facebook. People would log in. They're a great organization that provides a lot of good education. Also, you know, I really think it's important for people to reach out and read other books. You know, don't just rely on the history books that we were taught. You know, there's some great new materials out there that are telling more of a balanced story, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think the number one thing I would say is, like, get in proximity to local Indigenous people. You know, learn from people.
Mm-hmm.
Learn from their experiences. You know, we are a very open community, not during COVID times, obviously, because we're trying to protect our peoples. But, you know, we've got resources out there. We've got Facebook. We've got social media. All the things that you can educate yourself around the different Indigenous groups in Alaska.
That's radical. I'm so excited to be here with you guys, to be able to observe and celebrate this with you guys. Lisa, Mita, thank you guys so much for joining us today. Everyone, this has been Hometown Alaska with Lisa Wade and Mita Dewitt. I'm your host, Justin Williams. Our audio engineer today is Tobin Shelby. Thank you guys so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.